Before we get started with this episode, I wanted to let you know that May is Mental Health Awareness Month. In honor of this, I'm making my signature course, Resiliency Sprint, 50% off just for podcast listeners. You also get lifetime access to CBT Family Toolbox, over 100 activities, resources, and ideas to bring cognitive behavioral tools to your family. Head to childanxietysupport.com/resiliencysprint to learn all about this foundational course. And when you sign up, use code PODCAST to get 50% off both the coached and uncoached versions. This offer is only good till May 31st, so make sure you sign up now. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Child Anxiety Fact Podcast. My name is Dawn Friedman, and I'm the owner of Child Anxiety Support, a membership for parents of anxious kids. I have my master's in clinical counseling and additional postgraduate training in child anxiety disorders, including exposure and response prevention and the Supportive Parenting for Anxious Childhood Emotions Program, or SPACE program, which was designed by Dr. Ellie Lebowitz of the Yale Child Study Center. I'm also certified in infant toddler mental health. FAQ stands for Frequently Asked Questions, and each week I'll be answering your questions about childhood and teen anxiety. Let's get started. Today's question is, what do parents get wrong about child anxiety counseling? This question is a bit of a trick because no one's actually asked it, but I wanted to answer it anyway because I want to help families get help. The biggest misconception that parents have about any kind of child counseling is that the counselor is going to fix things. What things? Well, that depends on why the parent has brought their child to counseling. Maybe it's the child's behavior, or the relationship the parent has with the child, or the child themselves. But this is not how counseling works. And let's just be clear that kids aren't broken, right? Even when they're really struggling, even when we're really struggling with them, kids aren't broken, ever. So of course, a counselor cannot fix something that isn't even broken. The way that counseling works is by creating a relationship between the therapist and the client, in this case, the child, and then leaning into that relationship to explore and guide. By explore, I mean learning who that client is, what motivates them, what are their strengths and challenges, what beliefs are holding them back, what beliefs are serving them well, who is in their support system, how can they tune into that, or how can their supports get better at helping them. And by guide, I mean giving information and teaching skills. Counseling works often by metaphor. Therapists are trying to explain ideas and concepts in a way that makes sense to the client and gives them greater insight into themselves and into how things work. And the counselor is working to connect the client with skills to make those efforts more effective. Counselors generally don't tell people what to do. Okay, sometimes they do. Sometimes they say, hey, you need to quit drinking. But that's not very useful if the counselor hasn't done a good job of connecting with the client, given that client insight into how their drinking is impacting their functioning and relationships, and help the client identify the resources that are available to them. So saying something like you need to quit drinking happens at the end of a whole lot of work that can take a long time. There's a lot of repetition in the therapeutic relationship. People need to hear the same things over and over again, often in new ways and in new context, because what doesn't have an impact one day might have an impact on another day, because the client is finally ready to hear it. With children, it's even more complicated, and the younger they are, the more complicated it is. So let's talk about some of that. Well, first of all, generally, it's not the child who has decided that they need counseling, it's the parent. Therefore, the counselor needs to work a little harder to get the child's buy-in. The child doesn't necessarily think anything needs to change. If a parent brings their 7-year-old to counseling because they want the 7-year-old to start sleeping alone, the 7-year-old probably doesn't agree that this needs to happen. So they're not even interested in the goal of the treatment plan. Instead, the counselor needs to work in a roundabout way to discover more about the child's functioning, not just at bedtime, but at other times, and figure out what skills are lacking. The counselor needs to understand child development in general and this child's development in particular. This might mean a lot of ruling out. What else is going on for the child? What's the family's sleep hygiene like? What's the child's physical health like? At the same time, the counselor is trying different metaphors to help the child learn skills that the child may not even be interested in. The younger the child is, the more likely this is going to be done through play. Therapeutic play is sometimes directive, in which the therapist is doing an activity with the child with a specific intent to pass on skills or information. Or it may be non-directive, where the child is choosing and managing the play, and the therapist is either observing or joining in to better understand the child and to connect and build rapport. There are benefits to both kinds of play, and different scenarios and relationships require different interventions. Here's something else I want to add. Sometimes parents may wonder, what am I paying the therapist for if all they're doing is playing with my child? But remember, play is rapport building. Play is discovery. And just like in working with adults, there are sessions that are just getting to know one another, just reconnecting, just a holding place while we learn to trust each other enough for the real work to begin. So that happens with children. It's not always a super goal-oriented session. Sometimes it's just a session to be together. This can be frustrating for parents who are looking for things to be different. Now, very often the issue will not be with the child, it will be with the parent, because the child isn't the one making the decisions. For example, and here we're talking about that 7-year-old I mentioned before, the one who won't go to sleep alone. Perhaps the bedtime routine is inconsistent or disruptive. Well, the person who's going to change that is not the kid, it's the parents. So the therapist also needs to get the parents' buy-in. This is not the same thing as blaming parents. This is not about blaming parents. This is about recognizing that in the family system, the parent who is bringing their child to counseling has demonstrated that they want things to change. And so they're really the ones who are going to have to change. When the parents change, the child will also change. Let's go back to that 7-year-old. Let's say the child is very sensitive to light, and the parents always leave the blinds open. I'm deliberately choosing something very obvious and clear to make this point. The 7-year-old is not going to be able to go to Target and get blackout curtains and then install them. That's up to the parents. If the parents don't do that, then the light-sensitive 7-year-old is likely to continue struggling no matter how often they go to the therapist. And this is how anxiety treatment works, too. In lots of ways, parents act like training wheels on a bike. They are there to support their child while their child builds new skills. Eventually, the parents need to remove their support and let their child learn to ride on their own. Anxious children will not necessarily want the parent to stop being training wheels, and yet the parent needs to stop anyway. This is often the point where the parent will bring the child into counseling, which is wonderful, but they will continue acting like training wheels. What they want, and I understand this, is for the therapist to talk their child into wanting to change, so that the child will change. The parents are waiting for the child to say, "Please stop being my training wheels now, I am ready to do it on my own." But this may not ever happen. The more anxious the child is, the less likely this is to happen. There is a large body of research that says that when we do it this way, waiting for the child to ask for the training wheels to come off, that we're doing it backwards. And if the parent doesn't understand that things work this way, they may continue to be training wheels even when the child has asked them to stop, because the parent doesn't realize that's what they're doing. It's common in families with anxious children for the parents to have anxiety too. And as the child begins to grow and stretch and confront their anxiety, this might trigger the parent's anxiety. Then we might have a child who is ready to go without training wheels and a parent inadvertently getting in their way by checking in repeatedly. Are you sure? Are you sure you're ready? Do you have a plan if you fail? Do you want to go over the plan one more time? This is another reason why parents must understand how anxiety works and to be a part of the intervention, even if the child is the one asking for change. So, in a nutshell, what parents get wrong about child anxiety counseling is believing that it's up to and the responsibility of the child to do the learning and do the changing. And that's never true. It's a family affair. Parents need to understand anxiety, how it works, how it's perpetuated, the different ways it shows up. Parents need to identify their own anxiety, knowing when they are projecting their anxiety onto the child, knowing when their worry is interfering with the intervention, and they need to learn how to care for their own anxiety. As I often say, your parenting is not the problem, it's the solution. The strong relationship you have built with your child can pay off now as you ask your child to stretch and grow through their anxiety. And you get to stretch and grow too. If you've had unaddressed anxiety in the past, if you were an anxious child, if you are anxious now, then you must address that in the context of supporting your child in their own anxiety. And this ultimately is why I built Child Anxiety Support. Because even if the child is in counseling, the parents need to do their own work. As a counselor, I would only see a child once a week or maybe every 2 weeks. But parents, of course, well, you're with your children all the time. And so you can affect real change in the family and in your child's functioning. As studies show, empowering parents to support their children is what makes a real difference in anxiety treatment. Child Anxiety Support is my effort to make that more accessible, less expensive, and more convenient. I hope you'll check it out. Thank you so much for tuning in this week. If you have a question you would like me to answer on the show, please go to childanxietysupport.com/FAQ. And if you'd like to learn more about the Child Anxiety Support membership, please go to childanxietysupport.com. The membership offers courses, live events, and community to help you design a personalized program to free your family from the trap of child anxiety. I hope you'll consider subscribing to the podcast and sharing it with any friends or family who you think might find it helpful. You can get more of my child anxiety content over at Instagram, where I'm Dawn Friedman, MSED, or on Facebook at the Child Anxiety Support page. Thanks again, and have a great week.